We need to set our sights higher than just making sure government doesn't screw things up.
I'll give a fair go to all on the floor of this chamber.
Hey, what happened?
The Wrap.
It's time for The Wrap, where we revisit the biggest stories of the week and the little ones, the ones you may have missed. Joining me tonight is Santila Chingaipe. She's a journalist with SBS World News. Hi.
Hi, Patricia.
Welcome. And Liz Minchin, also senior editor at The Conversation website. Hi, Liz.
Good evening.
Let's start with Santilla's big story of the week, and that's today, which marks the 10 years since the Cronulla riots in Sydney. It's not really an anniversary that many of us would want to commemorate, is it? It's not a proud anniversary.
No, it's not. And obviously, you know, the events that almost seemed like they were one-off 10 years ago are becoming a common occurrence. You know, we've now got or movements and political parties that are echoing some of the sentiment that was happening around that time. And a moment that seemed to stain, you know, Australian history is now a fabric. You know, I mean, you've got groups like the Freedom Party or the Anti-Freedom Party, one of the groups that have emerged. You've got the Rise Up Party that are, you know, promoting that anti-Islam rhetoric, which isn't a great thing.
Liz, How were you impacted by the riots 10 years ago?
It's been quite bizarre, actually, thinking back to it. 10 years ago, I was working at The Age as a mid-20s reporter, and I put my hand up to go in the aftermath, so not as it had just happened, but to do the sort of follow-up on, you know, how are people in Cronulla feeling, but also how are people in Western Sydney feeling. And I remember some really bizarre things, like stopping by the side of the road as police were doing checks on people driving in and out of Cronulla, Sutherland Shire, and one young guy getting out of his car and saying, "I'm not a leb, why are you stopping me? I'm not a leb." And he was actually probably maybe Italian background or something, but that language around lebs, which I hadn't actually heard being in Melbourne, and suddenly I was listening to talkback radio in Sydney and hearing it all the time. So even though I was in my own country, it actually felt quite foreign coming from Melbourne.
The right-wing Party for Freedom was planning to hold a memorial rally tomorrow. Santilla, what has happened to the planned rally?
Well, there was a last-minute injunction by the New South Wales Police Commissioner, and so that rally isn't going to go ahead. They were planning on commemorating this day. And, you know, basically on the grounds that, you know, the police were worried that it could turn violent. And that was a decision. And I think the guy that leads this party argued that it was an attack on freedom of speech.
I've got a bit of audio from him. His name is Nick Folks. He's been around quite a bit today. Here's some audio from him.
Yeah, I'm just shocked today, you know. We've sort of followed the letter of the law and just stayed within those parameters and we've compromised all the way to try and find resolution, and we haven't found resolution. And yeah, I'm just shocked, really. I'm just shocked and saddened. But we'll continue on. And yeah, free speech is at stake here, and we've got a right as Australians to exercise that free speech.
Is he right? I mean, is free speech at risk because of the court's ruling?
Look, I would disagree with that. I really would, especially given the climate at the moment. I mean, that kind of language and even that kind of, it's not even a celebration, but whatever it is that they were planning on staging, given the climate in the country, given the fact that the anti-Muslim sentiment is at levels that, you know, to a certain extent we haven't seen for a very, very long time. And following the events in Paris when politicians were making comments that the rhetoric wasn't the most conducive to social cohesion, having that rally go ahead today probably wouldn't have been a great idea, just because the mood is just not where it should be. And I think what's been interesting is that groups like these can continue to make these kinds of comments and say these sorts of things, and very little is being said to call it out and condemn it. Whereas if it was on the other sort of side of the spectrum or the argument, you know, politicians would be very quick to come out and condemn and criticise that sort of language. And it is hateful. You know, it is targeting particular groups of people and their belief system. So, yeah, I just thought.
Liz, do you think there's a free speech issue? Or I'll put it this way, because I do think this might be an issue. Do you think that when you stop something like this, you actually, you know, impose a restriction on people from gathering in this case, that you perhaps might, you know, create more fans of the cause because they feel in some ways that they're being repressed? Is that a potential?
I think that's a really good question, and it's I know even going back to Pauline Hanson, at the time a number of people, including Margot Kingston, who was then a high-profile political journalist, didn't want to report on her. And in the end, actually, Margot Kingston, who everyone would probably know is pretty left-wing, came around to the view that actually if you don't report them, if you don't engage at all, it's actually bad for democracy. I think in this case, the police have raised pretty serious issues about public safety, and that does have to come first. But at the same time, you don't want to be stopping protests very lightly. But I do think in this case, it sounds like they had some pretty serious cause for concern.
It seems that they were trying to stop a potential riot.
Yeah, but then
That's right.
But then you could also make the same argument to people that are radical preachers and, you know, saying, do they have a right to say what they say? And it is hateful. And could people be repressed by, you know, not sharing those views? So it's kind of like, you know, you have to draw the line somewhere. You know?
Absolutely. It's a vexed issue, but I think it's one that really raises a lot of issues about community harmony, the way that we're interacting at the moment, the way that different groups are feeling. It's a very difficult one, I've got to say. Let's move to your big story of the week, Liz, and that's the COP21 talks. We actually had the Greens leader, Richard Di Natale, on at the a little earlier, giving his take. There's only a day left. Do you think they're going to do a deal?
I think so. I was actually, just before I came on air, I called a scientist who I've worked with before and asked her. She's usually pretty cynical and she's pretty hard-headed. And I was surprised by her response, and it was actually a smart response. I nearly pretended it was mine. She was saying that one of the most significant things about these talks is even the fact that 1.5 degrees is on the table. Yes, these targets don't necessarily mean anything if the world then doesn't act on them. The fact that that's even up for discussion is because the head of the UN body was smart enough to not make the mistakes of the past, which was come to a meeting, talk for 2 weeks, or go home and that's it. Actually, they forced countries to say what their targets were going to be in advance. And I think that's why we've seen countries, including Australia, actually having to put up targets and say, this is what we're doing. So whatever the agreement is, I think whatever the agreement ends up being, I think, again, one of the more interesting stories out of it has been the response from business. Business is there in Paris in much bigger numbers. And this is no longer just an environmental story. It's very much an economic story.
I want to move already to the small stories because we're fast running out of time. I'm going to start with this one. Bill Shorten texting. Centilla, you had a look at this one. This is Liz's choice, but I'll let you go first.
I did. It was an interesting one because I don't drive. So I was sort of thinking, well, you probably shouldn't be texting while driving anyway.
No, it's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, and I can't imagine what is so important, you know, in a text message that you actually need to look at it.
A lot of people do it, though. It's, I think,
about 50 to 60% of people fess up to doing it.
But I just can't imagine what would be so important that you would need to actually look at it while you...
Sometimes nothing important at all. Not saying... I am. You know what? I'm very phone-obsessed. You know what you do? You put it in the boot. No, you keep... I'm serious. That is my advice to people.
Advice from the police,
too. Oh, is
it?
Okay.
It's good advice.
See?
Yeah.
See me in the cops. I just think it's the only way. You can't access it. There's no temptation. Because there is a temptation. Mm. I'll quickly look. You know, sometimes genuinely, maybe there's something wrong with my kid. I'm getting a text. I think there's reasons why people think it's okay for a minute, but of course it's very dangerous. What do you make of it, though, Liz, on a political level? It looks like Bill Shorten... Really, he's highly scrutinised. I mean, there's video footage of him doing it.
Yeah, the video footage actually looked fairly dangerous in itself. It hasn't been a great week for Bill. And I did pick this partly because, actually, I used to do this. I was shocked that he was doing it while driving. I used to do it at the traffic lights.
Yes,
but then
the
when
traffic
I had
lights.
A look, yeah. No, I never did driving. But I stopped a year ago. The Queensland Police actually added this. They talk about the Fatal Five, and they added driver distraction, including texting and other things on your phone, because they were seeing more and more people actually, it's pretty gruesome, but actually seeing crashes with people with phones embedded into their hands. So pretty full-on stuff and a number of crashes where, you know, text message half being written and phones flung out of the car and things. So for people saying, it's not that serious, it's not that bad, it is actually a really bad look for Shorten, and it is something to take seriously.
That's right, and he's been fined and he went to the police. He is taking it seriously because, you know, it's incredibly embarrassing as well. All right, your little story of the week, Tanzania's president cancelling Independence Day celebrations. Walk us through it.
Yes, I love this story. And this guy, his name is John Magufuli, and he was elected, I think, about a month ago. Tanzania's new president, and he has come on a wave of saying that, you know, he's against corruption and he wants to change the structure of how Tanzania does things. And he's a very thrifty president, you know. And so there's a hashtag on Twitter that's quite popular in East Africa, which is "What would Magufuli do?" So people are just coming up with the funniest things, you know, instead of...
What are some of the things?
Oh, I don't know. Like, say you wanted to take an Uber home tonight, you know, the cost-cutting method might be... taking public transport, or even better, walking home.
Because you get to there was someone. One that I really liked. The hashtag is really funny. You should Google it. The Guardian Africa put together some examples of it, and there's one about a guy wanted to buy a TV stand. What would Magufuli do? The picture is of the guy actually holding the TV, balancing it on his head while his wife watches. So he's saving money on the TV stand.
Yeah. And it's been interesting because he did those independence celebrations. He diverted that money to a public cleanup operation, you know, and he said, we don't need to spend this money on Independence Day celebrations. We could have a more, you know, smaller, quieter one and divert these funds to cleaning up the country. He went out, you know, got his hands dirty, helped the Tanzanians clean up the street.
Is he popular?
He is quite popular. He is quite popular. And I think what's going to be interesting watching how he governs is the flow-on effect it might have with some of the countries in the region. I mean, you've got some leaders in that region that are considered corrupt and, you know, their citizens might then be asking questions, well, if the Tanzanians aren't putting up with this, why should we? So he's going to be an interesting one to watch for sure.
Liz, this has been the year of the very popular politicians like Justin Trudeau in Canada, kind of a rock star politician that he is. Do you have a favourite world leader?
Well, I was just thinking, not so much a favourite, but this did remind me of the former Uruguayan president as well, who used to have a very beat-up car. And actually, speaking of Trudeau, if you haven't watched it, you should watch the footage of him in a boxing match 3 years ago. It's pretty funny, and I think it's the moment where he got his mojo and became a future prime minister.
So he is your favourite, is he?
I would say it's the most entertaining. Watching politicians beat each other up is pretty funny. He was fighting at Conservative and the commentary is pretty hilarious.
All right, I haven't actually watched that.
He's the most attractive.
Well. Well, yes. You know, he's matinee idol, isn't he? He's too good looking to be a politician, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a profession for ugly people, isn't it?
A colleague of mine who's over in Paris has said that when he kind of walks into a room, he sort of sweeps into the room with his entourage and sweeps out again. So
I love it. The word sweep is so loaded, isn't it? It's this sort of godlike figure walking in. I don't know, Santilla, who's your favourite world leader?
I don't have a favourite. I'm a journalist.
You all, that's what I've noticed. You know, I don't have a favourite. Malcolm Turnbull.
Well, who's your favourite?
I don't know. Now we're putting you on. I'm just as bad as you guys. Helen, you're my guests. I'm allowed to do that. I don't have to have a view. I'm the facilitator. I do think Justin Trudeau does have a bit of a star quality at the moment.
There was a Mexican president. He was also seen as one of the most attractive world leaders, although he's a bit, you know, the question marks about his leadership in Mexico, but...
There you go.
Some find him attractive.
We'll leave it there. You guys have been so fun to talk to, particularly what I needed on a Friday night. Thank you so much to Santilla Chingayipe. She's a journalist with SBS World News. And to Liz Minchin, senior editor at The Conversation website. I actually went to university with Liz. This is what happens to you as you age. You go, hi, I met you when I was 10. It's time. You're listening to RN Drive. I'm Patricia Carvelis on your radio till 7:30.